Welcome to the Prosperous Piano Teacher Podcast. I'm Ashley Young, pianist, instructor, and business coach, and I'm here to help you dream big about what your studio could be if you are willing to open your mind and level up your business skills. I'm going to share the tangible strategies that I've learned for streamlining and scaling your studio so that you can align your business to work for your life instead of letting your business control your life. I am so happy that you're here. Let's dive in. Hey there, before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to make a quick announcement. I have a brand new business coaching package that I am opening up to two people in the next couple of weeks. This coaching package is definitely not for everyone. This is for those of you that already are collecting leads and growing your email address. This is for those of you that have ideas of courses that you want to create, or those of you that have already created courses, but you would like help learning how to market and sell those courses in more effective ways. This is for those of you that really want to level up your messaging and your marketing and make sure that as you try to create passive income with a course, that you're doing so in a way that is scalable and that you're doing so in a way that will lead you to success because you know how to market and sell that course. This package is going to be 8 sessions. And over the course of the 8 sessions, which don't necessarily meet every single week, we are going to get you help either creating your course or putting your course up on Kajabi. We're going to help you work on your live launching skills, your marketing, your messaging, growing your email list so that you constantly have new leads coming in that will be interested in what you're selling, and so much more. This package is going to include support between those 8 sessions via an app called Telegram. It's going to include access to scripts, templates, sales sequence emails, and everything that you need in order to have success with the launch and creation and promotion and selling of your course. And it's going to have exclusive Kajabi technical support from me and also my team. And my assistant is an amazing Kajabi expert. You will also have a chance to guest here on the podcast. So before we dive into today's episode, if this is something that you're interested in, pull up my DMs on Instagram, Ashley Young Music Studio, shoot me a message and we can chat about if this is a good fit for you. I can send you more details and ask you some questions to see if it would be a good fit. Again, it's not for everybody. And I don't even have a landing page up for this yet. It's just a new package that I'm so excited to offer. And I know that a couple of you are going to hear this and know that it is a fit for you. DM me and we'll chat. All right, now let's dive into the episode. Hello, hello, and welcome into an episode of The Prosperous Piano Teacher. I'm Ashley, and I am sitting here with Tiffany Strong Smith, and I'm so excited to be sitting here with her because we are going to have some wonderful conversation. Do you want to say hello, Tiffany?
Hello, I'm really excited. Really excited to jump in and do this. Thanks for the invite, Ashley. It's really fun.
Of course. So for those of you that don't know, Tiffany Strong Smith is an incredible human being. I've had the chance to talk with her a few times now through Facebook Messenger, and then we had a little coffee Zoom chat a few weeks ago. And I first met you, Tiffany, through your Facebook group, Piano Teachers Gotta Have It, which is an incredible Facebook group that we are going to talk a little bit more about today. And so don't worry, listeners, you'll get a full rundown on what that is. And I was really intrigued, one, by your Facebook group, because it's so wonderful, the community that you fostered and the way that you have just created a really unique environment for teachers to share resources and come together in that way. And then the other thing that I have to share with listeners is that it's so funny because in other various Facebook groups, when I'm reading a post about someone that's struggling in their studio, whether it's communication with parents or getting students to practice, it doesn't matter what the post is. There's been dozens of times where I've been like, okay, I know exactly what I'm going to say upon reading the post. And then I go to comment and you have already commented the exact thing that I would say. So I've known for a while that we have similar aligned beliefs on studio policies and running your business and things like that. And so I love reading your posts because they're so thoughtful and insightful. And you have such like a kind and gentle presence that you share with other teachers. And that's so wonderful. So aww. Not only, yeah. And then one last thing for listeners, you also have, you have opened a brick and mortar studio, and at, you know, times I know the numbers have been up and down, you weathered the pandemic and you've had over 250 students in your studio. And I know we're going to dive into that story and talk a little more about that, but I think that there's going to be some really helpful nuggets, of you just sharing your journey of what that's been like. So welcome, welcome, welcome. I can't wait to dive in. Can you Give us just a little overview, as detailed as you want. Like, how did you end up where you are right now, you know, with what you're doing in your business? What has that journey been like?
Well, it's so fun. I like to tell people that I'm living the dream that I never knew I had. It was never my intention to open a brick and mortar studio. I actually was thinking just this morning about my journey. So it's fun that you asked that, because I did start lessons when I was five. I studied with the same wonderful teacher my whole childhood until I graduated from high school. And I adore her, love her so much. But I have to say that piano was not always what I wanted to do. And I spent many weeks crying and begging to quit. And my sweet parents, I thank them every day that they stuck with it and just kept telling me, we're not going to quit. We're not going to quit. You made this choice and we're going to keep going. And so because of that, I ended up with a talent that I'm so grateful for, that I've been able to use to benefit not only my life, but my family. And now to be able to have a studio where I teach, I always laugh. My mom and dad are no longer here. They both passed away, but I often think how surprised they would be to know that I not only have a studio, but we have, like you said, we had at one point over 250 kids, and I love it. I love that I can share with them music and just this enjoyment of learning and growing. So anyway, it's been a long journey when you think of it in that way, that it started when I was five. I had been teaching private lessons out of my home for many, many years. And in 2015, I was bored. I know it is the way it is. I was bored. I was frustrated. I felt like I was a parrot on repeat every week at lessons, trying to get these kids to do something and to progress. And I was at a point where I just knew I needed to change things or I was not going to be happy. And I thought a lot about it and had this idea to teach group lessons. And it wasn't something that was done a lot at that time. In fact, I looked online and I couldn't find very much on it. I found one person that had done it and kind of had given some suggestions. And I thought, well, you know, I might as well go for it, because I'm not happy the way it is. And I felt like the longer lesson times and the interactions with kids, et cetera, would be more fun and maybe motivate me and them. So in 2015, I started teaching group lessons, and long story short, it did amazingly well. And I outgrew my home, and my neighbors weren't happy with all of the people coming and going. And so I knew I was going to have to make a choice, and it was going to either be to stop doing group lessons or to find a place to go and be. And so I had a friend in the area that I adore, and he and I joined together and started Keybox Studio in Gilbert, Arizona. So in 2015, I had about 30 students. By 2020, just before COVID, or at the point of COVID, we had 250. So in 3 years, it just grew like crazy and was so fun and unbelievable. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's kind of the journey.
It's so incredible. And I'm curious to know, because I have never worked with a brick and mortar location. Mm-hmm. What was the transition like of going from your home to having a separate location? Was it you and this other teacher, or did you immediately bring on more staff?
So we immediately brought on more staff. I should say one of the great realizations of this decision was the fact that I don't know business. You know, here I was in this position, and I thought I had run all the numbers. I thought I knew exactly what it was going to take and what we would need and how we could make it work. And thankfully, we never lost money. We always gained, but it was a much different picture than what I thought it was going to be. But we did immediately hire teachers and found it was pretty tough. You know, it was a tough journey to figure out how to pay them what they deserve to be paid while also paying all of the bills and supporting, you know, this business aspect, and then also being able to bring some money home. And there was a little while where it was slim pickings on the money coming home. There wasn't a whole lot. So definitely. Yeah, we brought them on, and we actually did something really fun that I love. And we brought on teaching assistants. Again, we're teaching group lessons. And so we hired our advanced students to come in and teach alongside us and be teaching assistants. And that was so fun and has proven to be really beneficial in our business model. So kids are learning. Our advanced students are capable of helping to teach. They're in the room. They're watching the teachers that have years of experience. And they're gaining from that while also being a great support to our students. So,
that's a cool idea. Yeah, that's really unique. And so did you implement that teaching assistant model in addition to other staff that were still teaching other group classes, or was that instead of?
Nope, that was with. So we always have a teacher and a teaching assistant. We teach groups of four. I know that some do more, and that's great, but four is kind of our happy number where we feel like we're able to give everybody the individualized attention that they need and then still be able to, you know, have fun in the group setting. So
yeah, that makes sense. And can you speak to, so you said it was hard when you hired teachers, and I know for me, personally, every time I make the jump to hire someone, it immediately sheds light on where all of the little problem spots are in my business. Because the second that you think about trying to pass along a task, you realize how you haven't necessarily been doing it the most streamlined way, or you can't pass it off because it's too complicated. Like the process around it is too complicated, or there isn't a process. So what were some of the, like, if you had to name maybe the top one or two or even three things that were difficult about hiring teachers, what were they for you?
Well, I would say number one is finding the right teachers, the ones that are going to fit with your culture and your vision. Sure. We've had some, you know, I have teachers with me today that have been with us for almost 7 years. That's so great. I think we did good, but we've also had some that haven't lasted at all. And so, you know, there's been changes and things that have, you know, not every business is going to fit with every type of individual. And there's definitely kind of a learning curve in finding what that is and who will enjoy working in your business and who won't. So finding the right teachers is hard. And that is probably my number one most difficult aspect of running this business. The second one I would say is figuring out those ratios in pay and how that works. And that was very, very eye-opening again, realizing I had no business or no experience, I should say, in running a business. I was going to say I had no business being running a business. But you learn, you know, and I think that it's hard too, thinking of, it was hard for me to put myself out there and put my business out there for other people. And like you said, have it be so open to all of the things that were not quite right yet. And I'm really, really grateful for staff and people that were willing to come with me on the journey. They were so patient and so good and kind and supportive. And I think being able to listen to their feedback and take what you need to and let go what you don't, you know, is another hard thing. So, did that answer the question?
I'm trying definitely.
Sometimes and my mind starts going and I can go down 100 different paths with my thoughts, but.
No, but definitely hiring people. I think that's something even across industries. That's something that I think a lot of business owners struggle with because a business is very different than a family, but it's almost like the the culture or the vibe, it has to be right. Like someone is kind of choosing to spend a lot of time with you, to immerse themselves in what your beliefs are, the business beliefs are, the company values, all of that. And so it does have to be the right fit. And then also it's the thing that I think about often is like, it's an investment because you get someone up and running, you pay someone for their training and all of that. And then when it doesn't work out, you know, it's the cost of doing business. But I know that that can be very difficult and very, very frustrating. Were there anything in your, so what was your studio policy like when you were teaching privately versus now that you have other teachers teaching and it's a brick and mortar location with, you know, all so many families and so many other teachers? What changes had to be made, if any?
You know, I'm gonna be pretty bold on this and say not a lot changed.
Yay! Yeah. I'm celebrating.
Right?
Yeah, tell me more.
I had taught for many years, obviously. I had already moved years and years ago to the flat rate tuition. We have a scheduled calendar. I don't do makeup lessons. Those things were already in place. I will say, again, as much as I loved this business partner that we joined with, that was kind of challenging sometimes because we had different views on whether or not there should be makeup lessons or whether or not this or that, and kind of being able to work that out. And kind of, I had to come to terms with, we can make policies, they can always change.
Yeah.
And kind of being flexible with that. And so not a lot changed for me. Yeah. I would say the hardest point for us was setting that tuition rate and recognizing, like I said, I had run all the numbers. We'd run the numbers together. We felt pretty strong in what we decided. It became clear really fast. We had way underestimated the costs of running a business. And so there were some big adjustments that had to take place there. And then, like I said, being able to know how much do you pay your teachers and how much do you need to keep the business going and how much do you feel is fair to take home to your family. And that's a hard thing in our industry. And I see that conversation a lot in Facebook groups of you know, people hiring, and they want to say, you know, people will say, how much, what percentage should you pay your teachers? And I watch these percentage numbers come in and I think, have you run a business? Because if we gave teachers 60% of what comes in, we wouldn't have a business. You know,
right.
You have to be very, very careful in how you set those. And so I always say, you know, my greatest suggestion, I guess, is to set what their hourly rate, what fair hourly rate there needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of working backwards, you're going to figure out their hourly rate. You're going to figure out what your business costs are, and you're going to figure out how much you need to take home. And then
right. That's
what you're going to charge as your tuition. If you try and go the other way and say, I'm going to charge X amount for tuition, and then we're going to divide it this way, you're probably going to run out of money. So that was definitely the trickiest thing because I love my teachers and I want them to be paid fairly.
Right.
We pay a fair hourly rate, of course it's a percentage of something, right?
Yes.
But I always say, if I were to tell people what percentage our teachers are making, they probably would think we're not being fair.
Right.
But we are being very fair because we're paying them a very fair hourly rate. And then we charge our students to make up that difference. So,
well, and I think the point of illustrating that you set your rate based on what the rate needs to be in order to facilitate the running of the business, as opposed to the other way around. So often I see people setting rates because they're scared that people will balk at their prices, or they're scared that people won't pay their prices. But what I've learned is that if you sell something for $12, people will buy it. If you sell something for $3,000, people will buy it. And it really just, you know, there's everything in between and everything above and below that. And as a business owner, really the most important thing is that you're setting your prices not based on your fear, not based on your feelings or your insecurities, because that's where I think a lot of people get themselves into trouble, not only if they're running a multi-teacher studio, but even if they're just setting rates for their personal studio where they're the main teacher. You know, that issue of rate comes up. Is there anything that you have had to overcome, or that, I don't know if this came up with the business partner or if it's come up with other teachers, but is there anything that you've had to overcome mindset wise in order to be able to charge the rate that you do? You know, mm-hmm. describing how you do that with setting the teacher's rate first, which means then that rate was that higher than you thought you might charge to get that overall right rate?
Yeah. So, I mean, we kind of always knew what the hourly rate was that we needed to pay our teachers for our area. And so, like I said, we did it backwards, because we set, like you said, we set our tuition at what we thought people would pay.
Yes.
and then we knew what we needed to pay our teachers, and we thought the difference was enough to cover the business and have some take home. And it just wasn't. And so then we needed to do an increase.
Yeah.
And you have those mindsets where you're like, oh, but they just came and we're just starting this business. And if we raise it already 1 year in, they're going to leave. They're not going to want to be here. It's going to be too much. I mean, all of those things. And now you have the burden of being locked into a lease that you need to pay for. And the fear is, if you raise your prices, that everybody's going to leave.
Right.
And now you're going to not have anything to pay your rent with, right?
Right.
And so it was hard and it was scary. And I know one of the big issues that would come up as we made these decisions is we have a lot of families. One of the great things about group lessons is we had a family with six kids, and they would bring their six kids and they were done in an hour.
Because
them all at the same time. I mean, who is not going to love that? So you go to raise your prices and you're thinking, but they have six kids.
Right.
That's going to, you know, and a really wise person said to me one time, so wait, you're not going to raise your prices because of one family with six kids? And I was like, oh my gosh, I am totally doing that. I am making a decision for everybody based on this one family with six kids. And I realized, you know what, I got to change that. I can always raise the tuition. And if I feel that there's a need to give a scholarship to the family with six kids, I can do that. But to not raise my prices because I'm worried about families with siblings is not a good business perspective.
Right.
Right. And so that was hard. And then you start thinking, well, we need to raise it by in order to make this business make financial sense. In fact, I was thinking this morning, it's kind of funny, but my husband for a long time said, this is a really expensive hobby. And I was like, yeah, it is, you know? And so you're trying to make these decisions so that it can no longer be an expensive hobby, that it can actually bring in income for your family. And you start thinking, okay, well, we'll raise up $5 and then next year we'll raise up five. Well, that's not going to do it, you know? And so we had to make significant increases. And I think the first year we raised by $10 and we thought we were going to die, and it was totally fine.
Yep.
After the pandemic, my business partner and I ended up separating ways. I bought the business in full and I made a really risky decision and I raised our prices by 30%. I was ready. I knew my thought was, well, if everybody quits, we're going to lose the business anyway. So I might as well go big and see what happens. And I raised by 30%. This is at the pandemic of the worst times ever. And we were better off than we've ever been.
Wow.
So it is a mindset, like you said, being able to get past it and say, this probably is not going to be as big of a deal as I'm making it to be. Yeah. And for the good of the business, and I think this is where we have to really focus as business owners, It is not selfish Mm-mm. to want the business to thrive. Mm-mm. It is not selfish to need to take home money to your family right. or to yourself or to, you know, to support your needs. That is not selfish. In fact, I think it's the opposite. I think when we make decisions that help us to be self-reliant and help us to be able to plan for the future and give support to others, that's the opposite of selfish. So this idea that we shouldn't raise our prices or that we should only raise tuition by $3 a year is a mindset that I believe needs to change in our industry. We need to do what we need to do with confidence and trust that what we offer is valuable.
Right.
And you know, you mentioned at our highest point, we had 250 students. I haven't ever made it back to 250 since the pandemic. But we're just under 200 right now.
Yeah.
But we are financially far better off with less enrollment.
Yeah.
And so that's the other thing that I think we have to always think of. It's not the healthiest business is not built by having the highest number of enrollment that you can possibly achieve.
Right.
There's a balance in there. And sometimes lower enrollment is better for the business if your ratios are where they need to be.
Right. Right. I think about that in the context. I mean, there's so many contexts for that, but my digital course that I sell is not priced at a low price point. It's not the highest, but it's not the lowest. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful that I decided to do it that way because it sells regularly. And I would like to get it to the point that it's selling even more regularly, perhaps like multiple times a day. But, you know, every time the sales increase, so does the percentage of logistical things I have to work out, customer service emails that come in, you know, little tweaks that happen. And it's a small scale because it's a digital course. And so it's, for the most part, pretty low amount of time that I have to spend on it. Mm-hmm. But that's another thing that I don't think people consider is that the more time, or excuse me, the more clients that you're serving, the higher level of energy and time you're putting back into the business. So yes. You can have 300 students or 150 students, and you can be making the same amount of money depending on what your rates are. But think of how much less time and energy it takes for 150 students versus 300 students. And so I think you're absolutely spot on in saying that more, the number of clients is not necessarily like the key performance indicator we want to look at. We want to look at the health of the business and the revenue streams that are coming into the business, because more clients can sometimes just equal more complication and more energy.
100%.
And that's not always the best thing.
Yes. Okay. So I just remembered, I'm going to bring this up because you and I, like you said, we have a lot that we see in common.
Yeah.
But I remember a Facebook conversation that we had where we saw things a little differently. And I love it.
Yeah.
Do you remember this? You might not.
I don't,
remember.
But yeah, I probably will once you tell me.
Well, you'll remember because it was a great conversation, but it was, we were talking about working harder. Somebody had asked, can a piano teacher make six figures?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there was all of this conversation about, no, they can't.
Right.
Right? There was
absolutely
a lot of that.
Not. Yeah.
Absolutely not. Unless you want to give all of your time and all of your energy and work 7 days a week, there's no way that you can make six figures.
Oh, that was such a... what is the word? A spark producing post. I do remember that post. Yeah.
And there's those, and you were one of them that was like, no. Yes, you can. You absolutely can. And I was another to say you can.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how the conversation went exactly, but it was something along the lines of, I said, you have to be willing to work hard.
Yeah.
And your comment, I don't remember again, so correct me, but it was something along the lines of, I don't think it's always about working harder, right? Working harder isn't what's going to bring in more money. And And we kind of had a discussion about what working hard is.
Yeah.
And I do not think that working hard, and I know some teachers do this, bless their hearts, and I love their stamina. What's the word?
That's stamina, not, yeah.
Did I just make that up?
That's okay.
I love their energy and their determination.
Yeah.
I don't want to teach 6 or 7 days a week. And yes. I don't want to teach for 8 or 9 hours a day. I love teaching,
yeah.
But I love other things too. And so you and I were kind of talking about what is working hard. And it kind of came to the conclusion that it's not working longer.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily working more hours or, you know, putting in more time. For me, I said it takes hard work. Because yeah. It takes, when I think of the last, you know, we opened our studio in 2017. I am working less hours than I have ever worked in my life, making more income than I've ever made in my life.
Yes.
I'm happier than I've ever been business-wise in my life yeah. and in other areas of my life. Working hard for me has been learning how to make tough decisions.
Yeah.
Learning how to follow my gut, follow my instincts,
mm-hmm.
and to trust in those. I mean, really, when it was like, am I going to continue teaching private lessons or doing group? I raised my prices mm-hmm. and started teaching group lessons. I thought I was going to lose every student that I had. I lost one.
Yeah.
Gut, right? Follow yeah. your gut. Go yes. with it. Trust it. I'm not saying be irresponsible. You know,
yeah.
think about what you're doing. Look at the pros and the cons and follow your gut and then go with
yeah.
it. Then when it came down to, I'm going to move out of my house that doesn't cost me anything. And I'm going to go lease a building that in our area is ridiculously expensive. I
yeah.
pay more in rent than I used to make in teaching.
Wow, it yeah.
It was a huge commitment.
Yeah.
I followed my gut and mm-hmm. it worked out, you know? And then you mentioned piano teachers gotta have it. That was a really fun, funny little story. But I had created a preschool program. And I wanted to market it, and I was trying to market it on some of the Facebook groups, and they wouldn't let me. And
yes.
so I was literally driving in the car with my husband on a vacation, and I thought, well, fine, then I'll just make my own group so that I can market it, and you guys do your thing. And so I did. That's how you. And I was driving. I said, what am I going to call it? And it just, the idea popped in my head, and I was like, piano teachers got to have it. And I typed it in, started the group, and we now have almost 25,000 people in the group.
Wow.
Just follow your gut is
yes.
my today. Just listen to your ideas. There's nothing ever wrong with following your idea. And sometimes yeah. you follow it to find out that it's not the way you're going to go. But right. at least you never have to wonder if you should have.
Yes.
Well, so yes. do it. Just
I love that.
Take advantage of the moment and do it. And you never know what's going to come.
I love so that.
That has
I
been,
love that so much.
Yeah. My biggest takeaway in the last 7 years is just go with it. Do what you
yep.
need to do. It's never gonna, well, I guess I shouldn't say that. I know people have gone through really hard things. And so I don't want to dismiss that. But I guess what I mean is the decisions that we make most often are not going to be life or death.
Right.
We can always pivot. We can
right.
always make a different choice and turn a different way. It's all part of the experience. It's all part mm-hmm. of learning and seeing where you want to go
right.
and being willing to try new things. You know, I was talking with a teacher, this was a while back, but she was kind of in the same position. She was bored. She was financially strapped. She was having a hard time getting new students. We talked about a lot of ideas, and it did not matter what idea we shared. There was always a reason in her mind why it wasn't going to work. And I thought, you know, if you're always thinking of why it can't happen, then it's not going to happen. But if you start looking at, okay, this could happen, but this could also happen. And what would I need to do for this to happen instead of what you don't want to happen? Mm-hmm. And then following that route and just, you know, leading with your heart and your passion and all the energy you have, right?
Yes. Yes.
And there it goes. So anyway.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Journey. Like I said, the dream that I never knew I had.
Yes.
is a lot of fun. And I do enjoy it. And it's led to other dreams that on another podcast, I'll have to come back. I'm very close. I've talked to you a little bit about it.
Yes.
And we have a new idea that is almost ready to launch. So
cool.
Yeah.
That's very exciting. Well, I'll definitely have to have you back because I know we won't share today, but I know when we had coffee, you had shared a little bit about your idea and it was a great idea. So I know listeners will be very excited to hear it.
I am so excited. So excited. Anyway.
Yeah. And I love, first of all, I just love everything that you just shared because I think you very succinctly and eloquently summed up like so many big takeaways. And I just want to like kind of bullet point them here again in case people miss them. But your definition of working hard is so wise. It's so, so, so wise. And I think we're in 100% agreement on that, that the type of hard that we are kind of shown by society is often like this hard work, long hours, do more, right. Hustle, hustle, hustle. And that's not necessarily the type of hard work that's going to move the needle. But I love what you shared about making hard decisions, making scary decisions, maybe being afraid, but practicing bravery and doing it anyway. Those are the types of hard that are really going to move the needle and help you experience that like quantum leap when it comes to transformation in your business or getting to the next level. And the following your intuition, the listening to your gut. I love that so much. It's really funny that you bring that up because I was just on a call right before this with a whole group of women entrepreneurs talking about the importance of following your intuition. And I know I've shared it on the podcast, but you might get a kick out of this too. I was joking, but in all seriousness, the way that I will often set prices for things after I do what you described is like, what makes sense for the business? What would make it work? I lay on my living room floor for 10 minutes. And then I ask myself, what do I want to charge? What is the number that I want to charge? And you know what? It's often crystal clear. And it's often, now that I've done some work on mindset and overcoming scarcity, it's often a number that is right in line with the number that you need to make the business work, or even a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. And so that importance of like really trusting your gut and knowing that internally, you know. I had a business coach once who, and her motto, which I love, was like, the answers are already inside of you. You already know. And oftentimes when you're asking everyone else, or when you're trying to like endlessly research, it's because you're trying to find something to confirm what you already know. And so when it comes to setting rates or making these big decisions, you know, as long as you've done some work to make sure that you're not being totally led by fear, mm-hmm. you likely already know. And it is in there in your gut. So I appreciate you saying that because it's so, 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 so true.
Yeah. And kind of on that same line, I feel like I personally make the mistake of making my decisions based off what I think that somebody else is going to think.
Yep.
And the reality is you have no idea what they're going to think. You have no idea. You know?
And there's no way to predict how many variations of the things that people will think, right?
And I just think of every hard decision that I've made. Like you said, when I think of what am I scared of? I'm scared of what other people are going to think.
Yeah.
Like usually that's it. Usually it's not, I don't know. I mean, does that make sense? Like,
totally.
I said, I'm worried about, you know, I'm going to raise my rates and everyone's going to think, oh, they're just money hungry or they're.
Yeah. Or who are they to charge that rate? Yep.
Yeah.
Totally.
And I start worrying about what they're going to think. And the reality is you know, you have no power to know what they're going to think, and you have no power to change what they're going to think one way or the other.
Right.
So do what you need to do.
Yeah.
And then be willing to put the work in to support that decision, you know? Yes. So when we raised our rates by 30% during the during, well, I guess it was right after. Well, no, it was kind of during the pandemic. But you have that fear of what's going to happen and what the reaction is going to be. And I will say, in 30 whatever years of teaching, the outcome has never been as difficult as I imagined in my mind that it was going to be.
Right.
Every single time it has been better. But you have to be willing to put the work in to, you know, when we raised our rates by 30%, I put the work in to make sure that we were expressing the value that people were getting. Mm-hmm. And I made sure that that value was there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to raise the rates by 30% and then not give a high quality experience.
Of course. Yeah.
So you got to do the work, but smart work. Like you
yes.
said,
it's not, exactly.
It's not about more hours. It's not about more, you know, students. I see so many get more students, get more students, get more students. Oh, and no. I think that's not going to do it.
And it's not sustainable most
of
the time.
It's not sustainable.
Yeah. I think, you know, there are times and I don't ever want people to get the wrong idea. And I know in past episodes, I've spoken to this. There have been times where I have stayed up and edited videos from 7 to 10 PM. There have been times where I've worked on the weekends. There have been times where, like, because I want to make the next leap, I do have to put in more hours, but simply getting more and more and more clients is not sustainable, right? You can work harder in or work longer hours in short sprints if it's a means to an end, if it's going to get you to that next level. But you have to be a little bit more picky and distinguish between the things that will really move the needle and get you where you want to go, and make sure that they have an end date. Because like you mentioned, you know, your example of like teaching 6 days a week, 7 hours a day, like at the end of, you're so emotionally depleted, and or at least I was, and most people that I know who have taught long hours like that, you don't have anything left to give. And no. So you're not going to be able to have that creative fuel or those other ideas, or, you know, you won't even probably be able to check in with your gut because you can't hear it if you're that tired and exhausted. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So true. So, I've been there, you know,
yeah.
I've been there, and it's just not, like you said, sustainable. It's not right. What I want to be. I want to enjoy teaching. I want to enjoy working. Again, you have to do it. I think that the idea is you don't want people to think that it's just easy.
Correct.
Right? Oh, you just, yeah. You only have
you just
to
did it
a couple days a week, you know, whatever. It's not that. It's you do smart work and you put the processes in place and you charge what you need to charge. And you put the foundation in this business plan and model, and you build it to really run itself.
Yeah.
And whether that's, you know, and that's not only for multi-teacher studios.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say the same thing for a single teacher studio. You have to build a structure so that it can run itself, and you're not, and it's not running you.
Right. Right. Exactly. And it's not running you. So, so, so true. So I know you shared a little bit of the story of how you started your Facebook group, which I love. Can you tell us a little more about what the journey and evolution has been like of that Facebook group? Because I know, you know, all Facebook groups start with one person, the person who creates it, and then slowly people start to grow. And yours has now catapulted the growth to, like you said, around 25,000 members. And I love your group, by the way. If you haven't been in Piano Teachers Gotta Have It, you have to go join the group, because you do a beautiful job of facilitating a space where people can come together and share what they're excited about. And because everyone in there is a teacher, you know, you are going to find posts that you're really interested in. And it's this lovely way for teachers to support each other and encourage each other. And just, what has that been like? I guess I'll stop talking. What has that been like?
Oh, you're so great. It has been so fun.
Yeah.
And as you were talking, I thought, as I wanted to share, I feel like we're in a revolution as piano teachers, and in a time where, you know, back in the day, sounding like the old lady, back in the day, it was a very lonely and very private business, right? You went to the music store and you bought your books and you came home and you gave them to your students and you taught. And that's, you know, very, you didn't have a lot of interaction.
Yeah.
I love that in today's world, we can have these opportunities. I mean, how fun. I never would have met you in a million years.
Right, right.
For opportunities like this. And so when I started Piano Teachers Gotta Have It, like I said, it was started out of spite. But these wonderful people started joining and they became friends, and they were incredibly talented composers and product developers from all over the world. And because of this group, it's no longer go to the music store and buy a book and come home and teach. You get to interact with the composers. You get to learn about them. I found this passion for supporting them and helping them. You know, again, back in the day, you had to have a publisher and you had to be in with some of the bigger publishers or else your work didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Now you have all of these self-published composers who have done amazing work, who have enhanced student learning in so many ways. I mean, it's just so fun to not be tied to that one book that you had to go buy at the music store. You now have this world of people and connection and support. And so it has been so fun to watch this group and watch the support that composers are getting from all over the world and product developers. I mean, some of the most amazing teaching products have made their debut on Piano Teachers Gotta Have It.
Right.
And that has been so fun. And it's just fun, kind of, you know, as we were talking about finding that ability to follow your gut and your intuition, to believe in your ideas. Piano Teachers Gotta Have It is an example of that. It's composed of all types of people who are doing just that. They're no longer locked into these, you know, boundaries of how it used to be. There's this unlimited reach and unlimited ideas. And just, I tell all my students they have unlimited potential. I believe that about every human being. And it's just been so fun to watch that come to life in Piano Teachers Gotta Have It. So yeah, it's just a fun place to go to be able to find people like you.
Yes.
And, you know, these wonderful, wonderful, creative, brilliant individuals who are sharing their ideas and really, like I said, revolutionizing the way we teach.
Yes, absolutely. And I love, I mean, I think you're doing, your vision for the group is so beautiful. And I think you are, I just have to say for everyone listening, you are such an incredible human to bring all these teachers together to do that. Because I think, you know, each Facebook group and even someone's Instagram page, like every single person you find or every single group you find on the internet, it's going to have its own culture and its own vibe. And to just be able to find that balance of a group that is so respectful and so collaborative. They want to come together. They want to support each other. And it's not spammy, right? Because the other option is sometimes you're in Facebook groups where then, you know, you do have like just all of these spam posts. And it's not fun to see all of those all of the time. Mm-hmm. And it's not that. It's this, it's people are so thoughtful in the encouragement they give and the way that they engage with each other. And I know that that starts with the person that created the group and the culture that you fostered. And so I just want to I want to say that to you because I hope you know how special that is and that ability to be able to lead in that way. And then also for the people that are listening, it really is. It's just, it's one of my favorite Facebook groups. And same can be said about now your newer one, which is Piano Teachers Gotta Do It.
Yeah.
Which is now, yeah. Do you want to speak a little bit to that of just what the difference is between those two groups?
Well, yes. First, I should say, I can't take much credit other than being in the car and starting a Facebook group out of spite. So it has been an incredible group that I am the only administrator on there.
Yeah.
We have not needed to have more people because the people are so kind and just typically respectful. We've had very few issues in the group, and it really just does speak to the people. And as I've been working on this other project, I haven't been involved in the group very much, in either of the groups. I will be back.
Yes. But,
it's been fine. They don't need me because it is such a great community of people. And
that's wonderful.
So yes, so piano teachers got to have it as kind of a place where you can go to find all of the up and coming resources, new ideas, great conversations on teaching methods. And then piano teachers got to do it was created to kind of help more along the business aspect of things, the policies, how you decide on your tuition, starting a business, and whether you want to expand to become a multi-teacher studio. So that's more of the where you would go to find suggestions on the business aspect of your teaching.
I love it. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I want to be mindful of the time. Can you tell us, for any listeners that might want to get in touch with you, I know people can join your Facebook groups, and I would highly recommend that you do. But then if anybody does want to get in touch with you, if they're curious about this project that we don't quite know about, but we're excited about, or, you know, they want to join your email list or anything like that, what would be the best way to do those types of things?
So honestly, if I knew the name of this new project, I would tell you all about it. It is completely developed and it is nameless. So that's
okay.
It is, you know, so anyway, but yes, you can always reach me at Tiffany, T-I-F-F-A-N-I at thekeyboxstudio.com.
Okay.
That is my email. You're always welcome to reach out. I love to talk shop. I am not a business coach. I won't lay claim to that. I'll leave that up to you, Ashley. But I'm always happy to talk and share ideas and give support where I can. So reach out anytime. I love to meet people. And then of course on Piano Teachers Gotta Have It or Piano Teachers Gotta Do It. And then we will see you soon in this unnamed project.
Yes. And we'll definitely, we have a huge cliffhanger now. So there's going to have to be a part two of this. So
I'll give everyone a hint.
Okay.
If Piano Teachers Gotta Have It was not in existence, this project would never be.
Mm.
And so it is going to be an amazing collaboration of the wonderful composers and product developers. And it's going to be amazing. So.
Yeah. I can't wait to hear more. Okay.
I can't wait.
Okay. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for being here, Tiffany. You are so amazing. Thank you for sharing your time and your story and your wisdom with us. I really appreciate it. And listeners, we will have Tiffany back on once she's ready to announce this big project.
Coming soon.
Yes. Okay. Everybody.
So fun. Thank you.
Yes, of course. Have a fantastic week, everybody. And I will talk to you next time. Thank you so much for listening. I love connecting with open-minded business owners from all over the world. As you know, a studio policy is one of the most important assets of your business, and a good studio policy will save you time and energy. For this reason, I created a free PDF with a list of 3 ways that you can level up your studio policy right now. To grab the free PDF, head on over to ashleyjyoung.com/levelup, and the link is in the show notes as well. Talk to you soon.